One of the first things we learned about nature as kids is that birds fly south for the winter. Not all birds, of course, but the winter roster of birds in temperate zones like this one differs from the summer roster, and the process of changing rosters is going on right now. Southbound migration brings all kinds of interesting critters to the skies and gardens and bird feeders, and our next guests are very much tuned in. Klamath Bird Observatory is based in Ashland, and, well, bird is its middle name. KBO is focused on migration and other bird matters and has an event coming up this weekend. Three guests in the studio: John Alexander, the Klamath Bird Observatory. I really have trouble saying that for some reason. It's probably the Bird Observatory together. Executive Director. Hi, John.
Hi.
Jamie Stevens is the Science Director for KBO. Good to see you again.
Thank you.
Shannon Rio's in the studio with us as well. She's one of the board members for the Klamath Bird Observatory. Thank you for joining us as well, Shannon.
Okay.
So, John, we were just catching up on how long KBO has been in existence, and you incorporated in 2000, but you started the work that actually led to the KBO 25 years ago, from the looks of it.
Yeah, we did. We were working with the Forest Service and Southern Oregon University and other partners in the region to build a comprehensive bird monitoring network here in Northern California and Southern Oregon, and that work started in 1992, and that's what the Bird Observatory grew out of, was that body of science.
And so what is done with the science then, Jamie? I mean, when you've collected all this information about all these birds, and I understand there's some banding and stuff going on too we can talk about, but once you have this massive amount of information about which birds and where, what do you do with it?
So there's two different facets to our science. First is long-term monitoring, essentially to understand how our bird populations are faring. And the second aspect of the work we do is looking at how individual species are responding to different changes across the landscape, be them natural or human-caused. And so about 30% of our western forest birds are in decline. So our energy right now is really going towards better understanding why those declines are happening and providing information to people that can do good things to reverse those trends.
Do you have a good idea about what the declines are caused by at this point, or whether it's a culmination of a number of factors?
It's definitely a culmination of a number of factors. Historically, there's been a lot of just outright habitat loss and degradation, which has led to some of those initial trends. And then now we're doing a lot to better understand what might be affecting individual species. And it can be, it's just a really multifaceted story to better understand what might be limiting an individual bird's population.
I know in other discussions with people who know birds well, we're hearing about the fact that birds that didn't used to show up this far north are doing so, looking for cooler climates. Is that what you're seeing as well?
We're definitely trying to understand potential changes in timing for our migratory species. One of the things that there's a lot of talk about is how our migratory species face challenges not only where they spend the summer and where they spend the winter, but there's all these places that they depend upon during their travels. And so with climate change, there's a lot of changes in the fruiting of plants and when things are coming out in the spring, as well as food resources in the fall. So understanding how that's happening at all those different places across their annual life cycle for our migrants is an important piece of the puzzle.
Well, it's an important thing for us to remember as casual observers, too, that it's not just like they pick up from the Rogue Valley and end up in the Bay Area the next day. I mean, it can be, I suppose, for some species, but the point is that they need way stations along the way, motels in essence, and restaurants.
Yeah, and there's some new work coming out as well just about even our resident birds are moving around after their breeding season, and the migrants might be having all these kind of interim life stages before they even take off for migration. We just published a paper looking at how some species are moving to higher elevation areas to molt their feathers and bulk up before that migration.
John Alexander, how big an operation is the Klamath Bird Observatory?
We have 9 full-time employees, and then in the summer, during the breeding season, we bring on seasonals, and given how much field work we might have, we bring on anywhere from 10 to 25 people to work with us, and some of those are expert professional birders that work with us, like One person that we love to work with is Frank Lospoluto, is a local here who's been working with us for many, many years and is just a fantastic field biologist. And then we also have an internship program where we bring in student interns and they work with us at our field station in the Upper Klamath Basin. They run most of our bird banding sites throughout Northern California and Southern Oregon. So full-time employees, 9, and then anywhere from 20 to 25 people brought on each season, depending on what kind of work we have lined up.
All right, so a bunch of people get involved in the efforts at different times of the year. Shannon Rio, the board member from KBO, I want to bring you in here. There is a fundraiser coming up this weekend. Tell us a bit about it, and if you can give us a broader picture, too, of the funding sources for the Klamath Bird Observatory.
Okay. We're having the Mountain Bird Conservation Fundraiser this Saturday, and the main event is Speaker Noah Stryker, and he is an exciting and inspiring person who will be speaking about his book that's coming out, Birding Without Borders. To me, why come to this event is we all love conservation, protecting wild places, birds, protecting our lands, but it's just an idea in our mind until we go outside and experience our love of that, or when we hear someone like Noah, who speaks with stories and photos and connects us to the heart and soul of why we love and want to protect our landscape. I think it'll be an inspiring talk. It's 4:30 to 7 on Saturday. We invite you to come. It's $75, and you can go to the Klamath Bird Observatory website or to klamathbird.org to sign up for that, or just show up between 4 and 4:30 if that's what your spontaneous self wants to do.
Now, where is that?
It's going to be at the Ashland Armory. And then what circles that event are field trips. There'll be a morning field trip with myself and Harry Fuller. There'll be a VIP chat time with Noah from 3 to 4:30. If you would like to get a copy of his book, Flight Without Feathers, what I want to say?
Birding Without
Borders. Birding, no, the other one. He's got another
book. He's got two books. So the book that's coming out, you're absolutely right, Birding Without Borders. And the book that he's going to be signing is
it's something without something.
With feathers.
The thing with feathers.
Yeah. With feathers.
And then I know there's something about feathers. And then there's also two field trips on Sunday. One will be with Noah and John Alexander, and the other one will be with Harry Fuller. All exciting opportunities to be inspired so that you not only will enjoy that time, but you'll be playing a part in contributing to conservation.
Our guests are from the Klamath Bird Observatory. Shannon Rio is a board member. John Alexander is the executive director. Jamie Stevens, the science director. You can join the conversation on the exchange about birds and events to help them out. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Noah Stryker's claim to fame, John, is that he saw, 6,200 bird species in 1 year?
Yeah, he set off to break the big year world record. There's a movie that came out a while ago that was called The Big Year, and it was about breaking the record in North America. And Noah actually set out to break the record throughout the world. And he saw nearly, if not more than half of the world's species. He visited every continent. Over 40 countries. And when you learn more about his story, and I think that's what he's going to be telling us about, that's what his new book, Birding Without Borders, is going to be about. It's really about him going out there and connecting with the people who live in the landscape and know the birds and hosted him and him really getting out on the ground and not only learning the birds but learning the people and the places where he went and saw those birds.
Even for people who know and appreciate birds, like the people around this table, is that still a staggering figure, 6,200 bird species in 1 year?
Absolutely.
Is it really?
It's extraordinary, and the record has been broken again.
Really?
It's been broken
since that time?
since 2015. Very high tech. I don't know the story completely about the folks that broke it, though I was on a pelagic trip with them while they were seeking the new record. But I think Noah, an Oregonian who grew up here. As a young man, the birding community in Oregon knew that Noah was going to be special. I remember hearing about Noah when he was younger. And so now here he is, you know, breaking these records and writing these exciting books. He had thousands of people following his adventures. He entered all of his data into eBird. So all of the information that he collected in trying to break the record, he contributed to a citizen science program that we're a part of called eBird.
I'm going to ask you about eBird because I failed to ask about that when I had the folks from the Oregon Shorebird Festival here. But there is it's a citizen science kind of thing where you just can share your information and get what other people have shared as well.
Yes. So eBird is a global citizen science tool, and it's tailored to the birder. So like a stamp collector, birders like to know where they were, and they like to know what they saw where they were. They like to know how many birds have they seen in their backyard, how many birds did they see on their vacation. So it allows you to log your birds in and keep those records for yourself, and that's why birders really like it. But we also encourage the birders to tell us how much time they spent birding. Tell us how many of each of the species they saw. And that science is being contributed to the largest growing database on Earth right now for biological sciences. And we have a local version of the eBird portal called eBird Northwest. And so that gives you birding tips and other kinds of things. And that's a part of the work that we do with our community education and citizen science programs is run eBird Northwest in collaboration with the Cornell Laboratory of Ornithology, many of the state and federal agencies in this area, and other partners.
So Jamie Stevens, what do you add as a science division at the Klamath Bird Observatory to go above what is available through citizen science and understanding birds?
Yeah, so the citizen science project that John just mentioned with eBird, as well as the Breeding Bird Survey, which is the longest-running citizen science project in this country. It started in the 60s and has done a good job of identifying trends in populations. So essentially, we see all this data that's coming in from the citizen scientists and from the birders as providing a wealth of information that we couldn't possibly collect on our own. And we try to utilize that in answering our own research questions and then make sure that the work that we're doing is really building off of that.
You mentioned bird banding a couple times now. So where do you bird the bands, band the birds, and what do you do with the information? How does that help you when they come back your way?
So we're operating 10 banding stations, and our student volunteer interns are largely running that program with the support of our staff. And they're based in the Upper Klamath Basin, but they spend their days traveling throughout Southern Oregon and Northern California. So those 10 stations are located kind of in a vicinity around here, a couple hours in every direction. And the banding information is really important because it doesn't only get us information about how our bird populations are doing, but more detailed information about like the health and the ability of those birds to whether or not they're producing successfully, whether or not they're surviving the winter. So we recently just put out a paper that's going to be published soon comparing the results from our banding stations to the Breeding Bird Survey. So this actually lends itself well to your previous question. What do we know is going on at the regional scale? And then what do we know here locally? And how can that help us inform how we can do good things for birds right here in our backyard?
Is there one bird, one set of circumstances that rises above the others that as you look at the declines in forest birds in particular that is surprising even to scientists?
One of the things from our recent results that was a little surprising was some of our trends for our riparian-associated species, the birds that like to hang out next to our streams and creeks and lakes. Several of them were doing well at our local banding stations. The yellow-breasted chat, which is experiencing regional declines, was faring well at our sites, but also showing a different trend across those 10 sites. So kind of just the importance of understanding that micro level as well as the big picture.
And John, I understand the KBO has been involved in some ways with the Cascade-Siskiyou National Monument. There's been some interrelations of science between what you do at KBO and the monument.
Yeah, we have a long history of working with the monument. When the monument was being considered by the Clinton administration, and this was just as the Klamath Bird Observatory was being incorporated, we did some initial inventories in some of the Research Natural Areas and other places that became the monument. We then were involved in coordinating a very large grazing study with university, non-government organization, and Bureau of Land Management partners. It was a study that was asked to be happened by the Clinton proclamation that created the monument. And then most recently, we have a couple of papers that we published in the last 2 years that that looked at what kinds of birds and habitats are not well represented in our protected areas in this region as a whole. And what we learned was that oak woodland and grassland bird species are underrepresented in our protected areas.
However, because those terrain types are underrepresented?
Because those terrain types are underrepresented in our national parks, our refuges. However, the Cascade Siskiyou National Monument was one of the protected areas that well represented those at-risk habitats. And we also identified areas around the monument, the existing monument at that time, that even better represented those habitats. And those habitats were included in the recent expansion. And that science, all of that science, has gone to the folks at the Department of Interior and the BLM. And it's a really great example thus far of how the agencies have used our science to inform their management and make management decisions.
Does the talk of a rollback at the monument then concern the Klamath Bird Observatory?
It concerns us in that we want to make sure that we continue to have a monument and have federal agencies that use science to make the decisions that they make. And so we're interested in understanding how the rollback is considering the science that we've put forth to try to inform those kind of decisions. And that information is just starting to come out with regards to the reports and how the science is being used, and we're just learning about that. So our concern is that the science be used and the science be well represented.
All right. Busy days always at the Klamath Bird Observatory. John Alexander is the executive director. Jamie Stevens, the science director. Shannon Rio, the board president. The fundraiser is Saturday at the Ashland Armory. Is it 4:30 that Noah Stryker will speak? Is that the main event?
Yes. So come at 4, get settled in. There'll be some other booths. There'll be a chance to hobnob.